First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springston Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSprinkston.com, where you can go for all of the latest news or information we're really covering right now, investigations, replays of the show. While you're at LouisvillePolitics.com, please make sure you join our RSS feed so we can get the show delivered directly to your inbox, and also join our email newsletter. We will send out updates to you once a week or once a month, depending on what you choose. And if you're so inclined, we would certainly ask that you may click that little donate button there as well and give us a hand keeping all this stuff going. For you guys that are new to the show, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334 are the numbers. You folks are in the listening queue. We appreciate you as always. Just make sure you hit the number one on your dial pad so we know you want to be heard on there. And for those of you who just like to chat, jump in the chat room. We've always got it open. You can sign in using your Facebook and your Twitter account, whichever is more convenient for you. I tell you, we are never short on news. I really kind of want to get started, put a couple of things out there real quick on Louisville, and then we want to get into some of this national stuff. Because I tell you what, I'm very disturbed by what the hell is going on in this, not only in this country, but around the world, and what we continue allowing. But right now in Louisville Metro Council President Jim King has decided to work with Mike O'Connell in the county attorney's office to see if there's a way that the legislative branch, the Metro Council itself, can discipline lawmakers short of their removal from office. Now, as everybody knows, Judy Green was impeached from office and removed from office. Barbara Shanklin, they tried to remove her from office. And now, a couple of years after all of this stuff goes down, all of a sudden, Jim King wants to look at other alternatives, which could be something, different ways to sanction the council members, censor, public recommend, things like that. It's really interesting to me. Why now? Why now? We went through the farce with Judy Green. Judy Green was impeached, and I only filed charges on that. And when I say farce, I don't mean that it was a negative thing, because it was the right thing to do. The farce was Barbara Shanklin, who should have been removed because, in my opinion, she did the same thing that Judy Green had done. Okay, but you know, as much as you know, some of these council members were wanting their heads, they split decisions. They removed Judy Greene, ended up keeping Barbara Shanklin, and now all of a sudden, you know, it's important to change these rules so that we can go after, you know, censorship or public reprimand. And I tell you, what makes all this interesting is I don't know why Jim King and the Met Council thinks they can't opt for lesser discipline than removal anyway. I don't know why that is. You know, in 2011, WFPL, you know, was reporting during the whole Judy Greene situation, you know, that the council could look at public reprimand, or they could look at censure, or they could look at a removal from office. So those options were on the table in 2011 as it was publicly reported, and I looked at the story today from back then. It was never changed or altered, you know. So apparently, you know, we have this information available. It's always up to the Metro Council how far they're going to go. And who's on the hot seat now? What are they worried about? Are they worried about Dan Johnson, who Jim King has bailed out more than one time, from what I'm told? You know, those are some serious questions. And we really need to find out why, you know, and Barbara Shanklin, I've got to agree with her statement to WFPL for this story. She says, I think it's a joke. They put me and Judy through hell, and now the rules change. Now if there may be ethics charges against one of them. She was talking about a different lawmaker, you know, and she did mention that the council member she was referring to was having finance problems. Anybody with half a brain would automatically assume that that would be the Democratic Caucus Vice Chair Dan Johnson, who also is white. Now, what I didn't like was the way that Barbara Shanklin termed that. You know, they want to change the rules now that there may be ethics charges against one of them. In my opinion, that was a clearly racial comment from Barbara Shanklin, which shows that the racial divide on the council there's nowhere near healing. It's as bad as it ever was. And remember, folks, remember, leaders lead, followers follow. The majority of our community follow the leader. If our elected leadership in this town is putting focus on this racism and using terms like this that is forcing racism, is it any wonder why we have a racial divide within our community? Is it any wonder at all? You know, so that's the story we're paying attention to. We're going to see how that one goes. There's a lot more information coming up on some of this we're not going to get into tonight. One of the good stories coming out today is actually coming out from WDRB. don't like the source, but I love the story. Less than a week after advertising, the Jefferson County Public Schools have to put an ad in the paper you know, for at least a week to say that they're looking at a property tax increase, to give time for feedback, all that kind of stuff. Well, JCPS Superintendent Donna Hargens has went on record that she will not, I repeat, she will not recommend a tax increase at the August 25th school board meeting. And so we look at this, you know, Hargens is not going to recommend a tax increase, but that does not mean that the taxes still won't go up. I actually have to say thank you to Donna Hargens, because in the past it has seemed that a tax increase is basically automatic, that the JCPS and the school superintendent, you know, typically just go ahead and raise taxes and we're expected to live with it. If JCPS raises them again this year, it will be a total of 7 years in a row that they have raised taxes. I'm curious to see if they're going to raise taxes when the superintendent clearly just said that we don't need the money. And that's basically what you can take from this. So we're going to find out if they try to raise taxes anyway. If they do, we've got some school district seats up for election in November. We need to make sure we remove a few of these school board members, which personally I think we need to remove them all every chance we get. GE Appliance Park is going to be selling. All indications are that they're going to be selling Appliance Park to Electrolux. And that is a disturbing thing. As we know, GE has had it great in Louisville. They basically work here tax-free. Jeffrey Imelt has outsourced every job you could possibly outsource to China and took American jobs away. And now that they have basically been put on the back burner as far as their appliances are concerned, well, now they want to throw GE's Appliance Park under the bus. I know that sounds kind of bad to a lot of people, but let's face facts here. If Electrolux is coming in to buy this thing, There's 6,000 employees in GE's appliance park today. Okay, how many of those guys are going to be left? How many of those guys are going to be left? One of the first things you see when a company takes over is they immediately downsize and eliminate jobs. And in most cases, I'm sorry, that's just a fact of life. That's business. We see that quite a bit. You know, so right now there's all kind of rumors up in the air. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. It's all speculation. But if somebody else comes in and buys Appliance Park, and this is the second time they've tried to sell it in recent years, if they come in and buy Appliance Park, you can bet we're going to have some more lost jobs in Louisville. And you can thank your local government for allowing that to happen. That's the way it works here in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to the Democratic Mafia. Interesting story. I found this just perusing some interesting fact information on Louisville, and I was looking at some different things today for another project I have going on, and I found this story. So for all you climate nuts, here's something to think about in Louisville, too. You know, we're continually talking about how we go over the pollution index. You know, we've got all of these major problems, right? Our air quality is so bad, all of these different things. So what do? We start putting all of these guards in place. We start using these so-called pollution credits. Find the hell out of business, tell them that they're all polluting, which is causing all our air quality problems. Well, lo and behold, we've got a study now. A U.S. report is out now, and this is thanks to WFL. A U.S. report is out now that says Louisville is one of the top 10 U.S. cities with a serious urban heat island effect. Now, what does that mean? Well, urban heat islands are basically areas in each city that are generally hotter than surrounding areas, the rural areas outside of the city. So when you look at large areas like, you know, paved roads, you know, no trees, those kind of things, those create these are what they call urban heat islands. So you've got all this concrete and asphalt downtown and in the urban areas. You know, you've got all of this stuff. There's no trees. There's no vegetation. Okay, so there's no shade. There's no moisture. All of that stuff that keeps them things cooler. Guess what? Now we have this urban heat island, which is one of the biggest problems that we have with our air quality. So while they are busy trying to force all these damn businesses out of business, trying to force all of these private people out of business who are providing much-needed jobs and claiming it's because they're violating some BS EPA rule that EPA just keeps adding on for no reason other than income, the reality is, perhaps it's not them. Perhaps if they would quit cutting down all the daggone trees and destroying everything and filling it up with concrete, like the Bridges project and all the extra stuff down there we don't need, taking even more out, maybe the air quality would be better. I thought that was a pretty interesting story for you climate people who really like that. I'm going to go ahead and put that link into the chat room for you. For anybody that's there, we'll get that now. And, you know, so I thought that was a pretty interesting story just to kind of touch on. We, and I have to apologize in advance too, folks, you're probably hearing me do a little sniffling, things like that. Yes, I've got the summertime allergies again, so I apologize for that. But we, I've got to move on to this story. This is incredible. This 45-foot-long campaign bus that she has been driving around in and everything else miraculously is rented from her father, and basically is rented at a very, very, very cheap rate. According to most places, the rate for renting one of these buses on a daily is $1,500 to $2,200 a day. She is apparently getting this for less than $500 a day from her dad, Jerry Lundigan. And as we know, Jerry Lundigan has had his own problems with this kind of stuff in the past. You know, back in the 80s, he was actually, he left office and had to resign office in disgrace because he was indicted. You know, and of course they had an appeal and he ended up winning the appeal, and I'm not going to take anything away from that, but, you know, that was politics, you know, and that kind of stuff. So we look at all of this stuff in play, and the thing that really kills me about this story, it isn't even so much the bus. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, she's doing all this stuff wrong. Yep, I feel it's fairly illegal myself. I would lean that way. At the very least, it's unethical. But for all the paid contributors to Alice in Wonderland Grimes' candidacy, her political campaign, what I'm not understanding here is why people are missing the obvious. It's not just the bus. She pays her dad's companies to cater every event. She pays her dad's company for the use of the bus. I mean, all this is a family slush fund, is what it seems like to me. It seems like the political campaign of Alice in Wonderland Grimes is turning into nothing more than a family slush fund. She's redirecting as much money out of her campaign as she possibly can to her dad and his business through her dad's business back to her dad's pockets. That's the truth. Thousands and thousands of dollars are being paid out. He's catering all of her events. Her dad is doing this through his business. All right. You know, he bought a bus at the same time she decided she was going to start campaigning and had it wrapped with her face and everything else all over it. Yeah, you know, you got to look at these things, folks. You got to look at this. This is how the Democrats support their supporters. They do it through this kind of stuff. And I would venture to say and go out on a limb here, in my opinion, as far as I'm concerned, what Jerry Lundigan is doing right now for Alice in Wonderland Grimes, his daughter, is fairly close or even par with the charges I brought against Jim King here in Louisville for the KREF violations that he committed against Katie King. I really believe that. But do you think anything's going to be done? No, 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 no. It's not. But it's very, very fascinating. A lot of outsiders are looking at this story, political experts, and they're even questioning this. So it's not just me. It's not me being on some kind of a rampage. It's just a fairly obvious set of circumstances to me. That's just the way I look at it. Paul, you're on the air.
Are you talking about public monies again not being properly spent?
You know, actually, this is campaign money not being properly spent. Election campaign finance is what it looks like.
Well, you know, ultimately, those funds are in Kentucky. They're reported to an organization called the Kentucky Registry for Election Finance.
Sure.
And if one brings charges, like I did a few years ago against a local candidate, for virtually the very same thing, and that is this local candidate received a house to use rent-free, I might add, and I brought charges against him because it was never reported on any of the six different forms that this candidate filled out and submitted.
And you're, of course, talking about Jeff Donahue, current state House rep. Go ahead.
That is correct. That is correct. And who happens to be a Democrat. And for the sake of disclosure, I am not a Republican, never have been, and never will be. But nonetheless, it was submitted to them. Add the disdain that these six or seven people on this committee had for me was absolutely disgusting. They refused in any shape, form, or fashion to take the hard evidence that I submitted regarding the value of this property, and they refused to require the violator, Donahue, to go ahead and prove the value of what he did receive. All Donahue's whole defense on that was basically, well, his numbers are wrong, meaning my numbers. And
right.
Ed, that was his whole defense. And this Kentucky Registry for Election Finance absolutely did not make the Donahue side prove anything. Prove anything. I had proof of market value. They didn't even require him to refute my proof. But yet they dismissed my proof because this is the way things are done in Kentucky. So, of course, I got a decision that didn't go the way I wanted it to go. And they said if I didn't like it, I could appeal it to the court system. That for a minute. Okay. If final resolution for me could be obtained in the court system, then why do we need the Kentucky Registry for Election Finance? Because that puts them in a position of basically being able to play politics and just wearing out the public. They wear you down, and then they say, if you don't like our decision, go to the courts. In the meantime, you spent whole lot of money and a whole lot of time and a whole lot of effort putting all this together, and you've basically tipped your hand to the other side without the benefit of a formal court proceeding. But if you don't like their decision, take it into court where you can reinvent the wheel, and they already know. They already know where you're coming from. So I don't like the Kentucky Registry for Election Finance. I don't believe it is serving the public's interest whatsoever, because it is staffed and stocked by political appointees from only the Democrats and the Republicans. There are no independent or nonpartisan people on this board. None.
Well, I think I agree with that. I really do. And I tell you, I mean, it's interesting because you're talking about the argument with Donahue, saying that you misstated your facts or your figures. You know, it's also basically the same thing that I went through with Jim King. Jim King was found guilty. The KREF found him guilty, but then the legal system decided not to make him pay for it. You know, you had Special Prosecutor Hart McGibbon, who actually had to investigate that case legally because I forced it, you know, and things like that. But even he came back and said he was 100% sure he could get an indictment against Jim King, but he refused to indict him because he said he could not guarantee a conviction. And when you look at this situation with Allison Lundgren and Grimes, you know, it's the same situation. Most experts, all the experts have said that this particular thing is $1,500 to $2,200 a day. Mitch McConnell has paid $2,200 a day for the bus he runs around in every day he uses it. So when this is done through her dad's company, you know, then it can be considered an illegal in-kind contribution. And that's not coming from Ed Springsteen, folks. Larry Noble, who is a general counsel for the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, for 13 years, you know, he says the same thing. So, you know, you got to look at all of these things. And it really comes down to that, Paul. It's a matter of what they want to do based on political standing. And I'll be honest with you, you know, one of the reasons that they always do this crap, I mean, they told me I could go through the court system if I wanted to. You know, and of course, I forced it through legal challenges. You know, but, man, it gets expensive. How many people can go out there and spend, you know, weeks and months, you know, defending the charges through the KREF, going back and forth to Frankfurt for hearings and things like that, which is awful expensive if you're not, you know, from Frankfurt itself, you know, and then they say, well, we're not going to do anything with it. Now you got to go to court. You know, you have that option. But if you go to court, now all of a sudden you're talking about spending thousands of dollars instead of hundreds of dollars. How many people can afford that expense?
Well, not very many. But in the case of Donahue had more than $5,000 given to him by the Kentucky Democrat Party in order to help defray his expenses. Okay, so the Democrat Party defended the Donahue campaign, and Donahue had almost no money out of pocket, and he only had to show up in court one time. He was represented by counsel the rest of the time. So, again, there was no skin off of his nose, but the general public has to jump through dozens of hoops, jump over more than two dozen barrels, and then basically has to be able to levitate themselves back and forth, all at their expense. Now, level playing field, I think not. And I think that that's one of the things that is that the Metro Council is trying to further exacerbate with their consideration of the changing of the rules. Didn't you get the benefit of legal assistance and prosecution in the Judy Greene case?
Yes.
Weren't public
yes.
funds used? Okay.
Yes.
And right did they start talking about eliminating that particular expenditure on behalf of an accuser, but yet they were going to retain that expenditure for a Metro Council person who had charges brought against them? Okay.
Oh, yeah, and that was Larry Clark who was trying – Larry Clark, State Representative Larry Clark, was trying to change state law to force the accuser to have to absorb all legal costs. You know, and the reality is this. You know, once you bring a complaint about, you know, the Ethics Commission decides whether to hear the complaint or not. I mean, you bring the complaint in, they discuss it. But the reason Judy Greene and Barbara Shanklin went to a full commission hearing like that is because they found cause to continue with it. So it's not like, you know, the taxpayers were paying a heck of a lot of money in the beginning of this. It didn't come out that way. Unfortunately, you know, we were able to prove our charges, and that's why the hearing went on, and that's why Judy Green ended up being removed. That's why Barbara Shanklin was on the hot seat for the same thing. You know, so I want to make sure that people aren't misled thinking that, you know, Metro Council members have to go through 1,000 ethics violations, and if they had to pay to defend themselves on each one of those, they'd never be able to do anything because they couldn't afford it. That's not exactly true. You know, and then, of course, you know, you look at situations like today. There's a lawsuit against Greg Fisher, the current mayor, on a personal level. This is a personal lawsuit against Greg Fisher for libel and slander brought about by Jay Morgan. You know, Greg Fisher is getting free counsel from Michael Connell's office. They've also hired Pat Mulvihill, who moved to Michael Connell's office for a little while. From what I understand, what I've been told through the rumor mill, he was put there, you know, specifically to work on the Fisher case. Fisher should be retaining and paying for private attorneys for that. We should not have any taxpayer resources used at all. This wasn't a lawsuit against Greg Fisher in his official capacity as mayor. This is a lawsuit against Greg Fisher as a person. But yet we're wasting taxpayer resources on it because he can do it. So, you know, we waste a lot of taxpayer resources on that kind of stuff, Paul. And you know, but for the most part, this is why the KREF, and this is what I've never understood, the KREF will sit there and play God, if you will, on his candidates. But very rarely do you see somebody who's been caught in big-time shenanigans. Now, I'm not talking about somebody, you know, has screwed up or something and accidentally, you know, not reported one thing, you know, that wasn't really minuscule. I mean, you know, $100, $200. But when you get into stuff like the Steve Henry case, the Jim King case, hundreds of thousands of dollars, those kind of things, Jeff Duhue, thousands of dollars, you know, these are the people that they don't want to mess with, and they won't mess with them if they're Democrats. So you're right. It's very interesting. And going to court just is not worth the expense. You just can't afford it. And in this case, you know,
the KREF was set up by politicians more than 35 years ago, ostensibly to act as, in fact, the watchdog over all of these politicians on behalf of the public. What is now happening here in 2013 and 2014 is that the KREF has actually become a political protector of the wayward and miscreant protecting these politicians. Now, they are not they're not being a watchdog, and that's why since they've abdicated, no, to a large degree. How many public officials in Kentucky in the more than 35-year public history of the KREF? How many public officials have been kicked out of office as a direct result of the KREF's findings?
You can't think of any.
That's correct. You can't think of any because the KREF's job from the outset was not to protect the public. It was to protect the politicians by putting an extra layer of hassle in between the public and adjudication. Remember, all they have to do is make whatever decision they believe is politically expedient. They get the press to report the KREF found them not guilty. And if the aggrieved party doesn't like the decision, take it into court and let a judge decide.
And when you're in bed with the press, of course, you're going to get anything you want. Yeah, and when you're in bed with the press, you're going to get anything you want. I think, you know, when you look at this, you said it was 35 years ago. What was going on 35 years ago to where they set up this this KREF? What was going on 35 years ago that made them decide to set up the KREF as more or less a shell game to protect politicians?
Was that the Bobtrot fiasco?
You betcha. It was Operation Bobtrot. You know, that was back in the 80s. So when you look at all of this stuff, going on and things like that, you know, you really have to look at the big picture here. That was back during the Operation Bobtrot area and time area and things like that. So, you know, yeah, I mean, this was put together intentionally to try to prevent another Bobtrot. So they act like they're doing something. They give a minuscule fine.
I disagree. I appreciate the fact that you're looking out for the public probably more than any government official out there. The fact of the matter is that I'm going to disagree with your assessment. It was to appear as if it was going to be looking out for the public interest. In fact, I would submit that it was created to make the process of getting to these dirty politicians more difficult for the public. And in fact, it was set up to be a dirty politician protection committee.
Okay, I'll agree with that. I've got no problem with that. I'll agree with that. I have no problem with that at all. And, you know, and if you want further proof, I mean, here's something here, too, you got to look at. You know, in the particular case of bringing back to Alice in Wonderland Grimes, you know, Jerry Lundgren, her dad, he's been in trouble before for using his catering business for things that wasn't right. He was convicted of a felony in 1989 for accepting a no-bid contract for his catering business at an event. And it was a violation of state law. It was a violation of state law because he was a legislator at the time. So he ended up having to resign his political offices. The only reason that that conviction was later overturned, it wasn't overturned because he was not guilty. The appeals court overturned it because it should have been classified as a misdemeanor and not a felony. And because they downgraded it to misdemeanor, said, hey, you charged this wrong as a felony instead of a misdemeanor, prosecutors said, ah, screw it. We're not going to go through the hassle of prosecuting him again. Wonder why that was. You know, so as we get on with this story and move into this, I mean, you know, the history of Lundgren is full of ethical problems. His daughter is no different. I think this story is a great example of the apple not falling far from the tree. And if you even want to go so far as to say that, you know, Alice in Wonderland Grimes is just letting her daddy do everything and really in the dark and clueless about it, go ahead. A lot of people said the same thing about Katie King and Jim King, that Katie King really didn't understand what her dad was doing. He was just running everything himself and taking the bull by the horns. So, you know, if you want to blame the daddy and not the daughter, fine. But if that's the case, then the daughter isn't smart enough to do the job she's running for. You know, and if it is the case, then the daughter is as guilty as the father. So, you know, take from that what you want to. I find it very, very interesting. One quick thing, I'm going to switch gears for you just a minute. We're going to get into some different things in Mike Brown and different things on that after the break. But real quick before we go to break, Paul, I know you're an NFL fan. I want to put this out there just for a quick second because I thought it was interesting, the interesting story of the day, I guess. According to the Wall Street Journal, the NFL is asking the three finalists that they are considering for the halftime show at the Super Bowl to donate all their post-Super Bowl earnings to the NFL itself. I kid you not. You know, as everybody knows, the NFL halftime show, these performers basically do it free because they get all the exposure. You know, it helps them sell new records or old records or keep them in the limelight, whatever. The NFL, of course, has plenty of money. But, you know, now it's fascinating. The league is trying to force whoever is going to do the Super Bowl halftime show to donate all proceeds after, you know, the post-Super Bowl earnings after the Super Bowl to donate all proceeds to the NFL. Paul, you're an NFL fan yourself. Does that sound really right to you?
Let's see. Billionaires who own these teams are asking to become even wealthier? You know?
That's what it sounds like to me. That's what it sounds like to me.
And it's not like, I mean, I tell you what, getting this top talent into the Super Bowl halftime show, that's a mutually beneficial arrangement. Both the performers as well as the NFL benefit from that. But
sure,
to take away the performer's incentive, which is the exposure and post-sales, I think is just overt, outright, crude, low-class greed on display. It's just plain old greed.
I totally agree with you. That was my first thought, too. I mean, here's the reality. You know, Super Bowl, you know, has one of the biggest TV audiences ever in history. Every year, they have the biggest TV audience. You know, but the majority of that audience, a large percentage of that audience, I would venture to say, you know, tunes in right before halftime just to watch the halftime show. There's a lot of people I know that do that. They just love to watch the halftime show because they're always so creative and so fascinating. You know, so, you know, they of course, the NFL and whoever's televising the Super Bowl actually do pretty damn good with the Nielsen ratings because of the halftime show, And the Nielsen ratings, of course, is how they decide what their advertising rates are going to be and all the other stuff. And, of course, those advertising rates go back to the NFL team owners. So, you know, I was like you. It's a wash my hand, I'll wash yours kind of a deal. Let's call it an even split. And to me, it is nothing but mere greed. I find it very, very fascinating. But I wanted to bring that up. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we get back, we're going to get into a few things. We're going to get into some of the St. Louis stuff. I think it's really important to do that now. We had another gentleman that was shot in St. Louis. This guy was wielding a knife, and people are outraged about that one. So what do you do? We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more when we get back. You listen to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
It's always funny, man. You know, you have people calling into the shows. We're taking a break. You go in to find out, you know, what their name is or whatever they want to do with comments. And they're always wanting to do something stupid. These spammers that don't have anything better to do. It's hilarious. Today, I guess I'm a GameStop employee or something. It's funnier than anything. But anyway, welcome back to the Ed Springsteen Show right here at the MVM Radio Network. Don't forget, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334 are the numbers. You know, Paul, we're going into break, and I'm glad you stuck around with us. I tell you, the situation in Missouri just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. I want to start with this story. We've got a story coming out now, coming out of the youngcons.com. But according to WDAF in Kansas City, the expert, Sean Parcells, was touting himself as this autopsy expert and everything else, and he was one of the people who had done the autopsy and did this national press conference with the autopsy results and all this other stuff. Turns out this guy isn't even a real doctor. So mainstream media, in their efforts to perpetrate whatever ends they want to perpetrate, didn't even verify the so-called expert that they were giving all of this daggone airtime to explain the autopsy reports. Turns out Sean Parcells is from Kansas City, Missouri, and he owns a company, says he owns a company, that provides autopsy services. He's not a forensic expert. Apparently, he owns a company called National Forensic Autopsy and Recovery Services. He said the lawyers for the family of Michael Brown. So here the parents are, and the media is going to jump on the bandwagon trying to portray this big image of how sweet and innocent their child was, said that the parents of Michael Brown, their attorneys, contacted him because he was an expert in gunshot wounds. And he goes on to say that he's a forensic pathologist assistant and a medical investigator. Turns out there's no such thing. Forensic pathologist Dr. Eric Mitchell swears that there's no such thing. It doesn't exist, except in the mind of Sean Parcells, there's no such thing as a forensic pathologist assistant. And he's very, very angry about that. You know, and I liked what he had to say, though. Dr. Mitchell went on to say that you can't claim a title because it's a formal, licensable position. You can assist somebody, but if you're going to use his analogy, then Dr. Mitchell says, since I've paid my taxes, I'm an assistant president of the United States. What do you think about all of that?
You know, tragedies in our society seem to bring out some really goofy people, okay? And in this case here, this is just yet another example of somebody wanting to get their 10 minutes of fame. I won't even give him 15, but he only gets 10. But the fact that he says that the family contacted him, well, we also know how that works. And that is somebody who was part of the Rent-A-Mob organization. And by the way, I just want to emphasize that multiple media sources have validated the fact that quite a number of the bad actors in the Ferguson, Missouri area are, in fact, from places outside of that immediate area, some from as far away as Oakland, California. So the Rent-A-Mob bunch, which we've heard about for years and that we've always, all of us have suspected there's such groups out there for rental, this is yet another example of the Rent-A-Mob bunch being hired by the race baiters that want to exacerbate the situation there for the town people of Ferguson, Missouri. But that having been said, I'm sure the parents had had this individual referred to them, and then they agreed for whatever reason to line up behind this guy. But, yeah, I mean, again, this is just so typical. Somebody is trying to advance an agenda at the expense of the dead kid. I mean, it's really that simple. And it is really that crude. Michael Brown is simply being used in death to advance agendas that Michael Brown may not have even agreed to. You may not have agreed with. But
who knows? I mean, that's the whole thing for me. In their quest to try to make this a race issue, you know, okay, we have a black man. This was a young child or anything else. None of that exists. I mean, even the AP violated their own copyright, if you will. According to their own rules, the AP says that if you're 18 years old, you're identified as a man or a woman. But they're going out there talking about, you know, advertising this as white cop shoots black young teen, you know, to make it appear like they were, you know, just free-falling on innocent children, you know. And then you follow up with this kind of a story, you know, and I'm not blaming the parents for this. The parents, of course, are grieving. You know, they want answers, you know, more than anybody. I mean, it's their child, for God's sake. The parents want answers more than anybody. So I'm not blaming the parents for this. What I'm blaming here is mainstream media and their quest to make it look like it's open season on African-Americans in this country and that the white man is racist, would use somebody that touted themselves as an expert without even checking the credentials to verify such. No matter who hired this guy, It was an affront to every American who is watching this crap each and every day on TV. It's an affront to the African-American community to be led by lies and mischief so somebody wants to daggone profit from it. You know, and it's just disgusting to me. I mean, you know, we have shootings every day, and forgive me, folks. You're going to call me a racist if you're African-American. But it's the truth. Every single day in this country, we have a white person killed by black criminals. And they are criminals because they're committing murder. I don't know if they've ever stolen anything, but when you kill somebody, it's murder. When you intentionally kill somebody. And this happens every day, but it doesn't get reported on the news. The knockout game has been going on for how long now? And you don't see this. White victims of black criminals paying this knockout game. They refuse to report on that stuff. They never report black-on-black crime. The majority of deaths within the African-American community are black-on-black crime, black-on-black shootings. They don't involve one white person. And they went so far in the Trayvon Martin case in their quest to create this racial divide on behalf of the liberal and progressive communist, as far as I'm concerned, agenda. They went so far in the Trayvon Martin case to even come up with a new race. It's called the white Hispanic. That's what they called George Zimmerman. And now we're seeing the same damn thing. This is nothing more, in my opinion, than mainstream sleeping with a hidden agenda to try to force a divide. And then you incite all these idiots coming from Oakland, California, Detroit, Michigan. They're coming from all over the place. These are nothing but gang members and criminals anyway. We've got them all in one place. Just arrest them all. I don't care. Seriously. Because what's going on in Ferguson and St. Louis today is not the residents that are doing this. Would you agree, Paul?
Absolutely. In fact, I've seen enough interviews so far that I know that the vast majority of the Ferguson, Missouri residents, while distraught over their perception that they perceive that some major injustice has been done, they also are quite willing and ready to work through the process of getting all the answers needed to make a final decision as to where the majority of the blame lies. They're not the ones, by and large, that are out there in the streets pillaging and plundering small business people who had nothing to do with either Michael Brown being on the street or with the police response. But yet, they're the ones that are suffering. Their stores are getting burned. They're getting pillaged. They're getting robbed. And they're suffering tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of financial loss, all because some of these black racists want to use this as an excuse to go steal stuff that's not theirs. And these thieves don't care one whit about the injustice that may have been perpetrated on Michael Brown. They don't care.
This has nothing to do with Michael Brown at all anymore. To the people of St. Louis and the real residents of Ferguson, of course it does. But to these outsiders, this is nothing more than an excuse to go cause havoc and mayhem. I mean, some of these damn reports that you're reading, I mean, you've got people that are quoted as saying, you know, black people who just came in and looted a store and come out with a bunch of stuff, tell on the news, we deserve this. Really? That's the mentality of, and again, these are the criminals and the gang members and stuff that are coming into St. Louis and creating the havoc. This isn't the residents, and that's the problem. You know, and now we've got another situation. St. Louis police fatally shot another man, Kajim Powell, 25 years old, walked into a convenience store, stole a bunch of energy drinks and some pastries, is the way that the article is putting it, then walked outside. This is coming off of AOL.com. He walked outside, started pacing back and forth on a sidewalk. Police were telling him to stop, you know, to put the knife down, everything else. They had their guns drawn just in case. I mean, that's the right time to draw a gun, right? He's got a weapon, you know. And he decided he wanted to start approaching the police, brandishing the knife. He got within 3 or 4 feet of the cop, and a cop shot him. Cop shot him. He's coming after him with a knife. The cop shot him and killed him. Here we go. Now they're trying to say this is another example of a white cop shooting at black men. You know, and this, of course, is making these idiots, you know, that are coming from other places come in here. You know, people that live in their neighborhood aren't going to destroy their own neighborhood as a rule. They're not going to do it. They're not going to riot on the streets and destroy the convenience stores.
That's a superb point, Ed. That's a superb point.
And that's the whole thing.
The Louisville community, unfortunately, went through a period of that back in the 70s where there was, in fact, a business district that was heavily patronized by the black community, and that community got destroyed down there, I think it was around 28th and Greenwood. But, those businesses got destroyed, and they did not go back. They did not go back. And so that hurts the community. That hurts the whole community when small business people are run out of the community all because of a very small percentage of thieves and thugs who want to take advantage of a tragic situation involving the death of another human being.
And the West End has never recovered.
No.
The West End has never recovered since then, and they have continued in a steady decline since. Now, a lot of that is because of our leadership have decided they're not going to help the West End. So here they are still paying a price 40 years later for something that happened then. You know, but when you look at this second shooting, and then you've got Chief Dotson was out there. You know, he said tasers weren't used because any time a suspect is brandishing a knife and you get within 3 or 4 feet of police, that's lethal range. So if the taser doesn't work, you know, at the end of the day, Dotson told the whole world, at the end of the day, our policy is that the officer should be able to go home safe, too. If you're charging with a knife, that's a lethal range. He should be able to use lethal force to stop it. As we know, and we have seen video evidence of this from different encounters across the country, you know, a taser is not an end-all, be-all. We've seen people that have been tased continue coming. After being repeatedly tased, it does not stop them because they're either hopped up on meth or something else, you know, or the adrenaline is rushing so hard. I don't know, whatever excuse you want to put there, you know. But the reality is tasers aren't always effective, folks. So if somebody's coming at you with a knife and you're 3 feet away, I don't care if you're cop or not. Shoot, defend yourself. I see the logic in that.
You hit upon another point that I think a lot of people – think in their minds, but they don't necessarily say, and that is when it comes to a confrontation between a cop and an ordinary citizen, whose life is more valuable? The answer is it's the cop's life is always more valuable than anybody else's, because the cops get away, they get away with all sorts of behavior that if the citizen had engaged in that same behavior, they would be charged with a crime, okay? Now, that's taken – forget the imminent physical threat issue, but just as a matter of equality, cops are considered to be more valuable than any other citizen. And, Ed, you more so than anybody in this conversation knows that type of attitude.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Perspective. Yes.
There's no doubt about it, you know, and when I talk about the cop shooting somebody 3 feet away with a knife, like I said, I don't care if you're a citizen or a cop, shoot, defend yourself. You know, but you know, the reality is this, though, and there's a couple of reasons why cops are getting all this heat nowadays. You know, for one thing, cops today, for some reason, just don't understand that their job is to protect and to serve. They go on that head trip, they get that ego, and they automatically assume that any situation they walk into is going to be a combative one. So they're already on edge before they even pull up to a scene. I don't care if they stop at a traffic accident. You see a cop get out of a traffic accident, he's already worried about something. You know, and here's the thing. I mean, we've got all kinds of reasons why a lot of people in America are thinking about that, and I'll just give you two of them real quick. Guy by the name of Elvis Mann, 55 years old. This is America.aljazeera.com. Don't care if you like the source. 55-year-old Elvis Mann. You know, in 2006, the police stopped him because he had a broken taillight. He got ticketed for not having a valid driver's license. This is in Alabama, folks. When he couldn't afford to pay the fine, he was automatically put on probation. Yes, you heard me right. He couldn't afford to pay the fine that he got, so he was put on probation because he didn't have $300 for the fine. And, you know, he didn't have the money, of course, to pay the ticket, which was bad enough. He was unemployed, living on disability payments. And then he had to start reporting to a judicial corrections office. All right. He's required to pay for that visit. Okay. And everything else. And that money was adding up because he didn't have the money for that. So finally, the probation office said, hey, issue a warrant for his arrest over a damn misdemeanor ticket. Another example, Danielle Wolf. This is how far people, this is how screwed up we are. Danielle Wolf was at a Kroger grocery store in North Augusta, South Carolina. She'd been there less than 3 weeks. Her family had moved there less than 3 weeks. So, you know, and as it is with any couple that's going to the grocery with small children, you know, things kind of happen. Well, anyway, her husband kept throwing stuff in the grocery cart. It was squishing the bread that she had put in there. And she kept yelling at him to stop it. He wasn't paying attention. And she used some language. She used the F word on her husband. She used the F word on her husband, but her kids were there, little kids. So a fellow shopper came to her, accused her of using the F word. All right. The police were called, and she ended up getting arrested for using the F word at Kroger because her kids happened to have small kids there. Apparently, this is acceptable in Augusta, South Carolina. Disorderly conduct is defined as riotous conduct of any kind, including crying out in a noisy, scandalous, or abusive manner in a public place or uttering while in a state of anger in the presence of another any obscene words or epithets. So you get arrested now for cussing.
Did she get convicted?
It's on the case. So these are the things. So
okay.
These are the things that you're looking at. You know,
she's not going to get convicted. She's not going to get convicted. She has a First Amendment right. She's not going to get arrested. She's not going to get convicted. Okay. So she's going to be in a similar situation, Ed, that you were in, and that is,
sure.
The government can do a lot of things, and they think they can get away with it with most people, and they do. But there are folks like you, and I'm sure this lady is going to stand up for her First Amendment rights, and she's gonna escape, but not without a whole bunch of hassle. And let's see if she follows through like you did, and that is making sure that, just like a lot of wealthy people make happen, make sure that her record gets expunged as if it never happened. Okay.
Well, yeah,
because that's the only fair thing to do.
Sure, but at the end of the day, now she's going to have a problem for probably a year, year and a half, depending on how long they stretch it out. I don't know what their laws are there. She can face the same thing I did. She's going to have attorney fees or something. She's going to have to pay
for it. That's correct.
Because she doesn't know how to present herself in court. You know, so it's nothing more than a nuisance and everything else. But when does a citizen, you know, have the right to tell you how to treat your kids in the first place? If she was screaming and yelling at her kids abusively, yeah, I could probably see that. But telling her husband to quit throwing frozen pizzas on top of the fucking bread, and that's arrestable? That is disturbing.
Again,
so,
it goes back to the police mentality that we just hit upon. The police, it's mm-hmm. the police mentality, okay? Back mm-hmm. in the 1920s and 1930s, when the police actually were more abusive to certain individuals than they are today, the cop on the street was allowed to use good old-fashioned common sense. And then particularly in disputes between two individuals, and you see it on the TV show Cops. You see cops using good judgment and not escalating the situation to anything that's citable or finable or arrestable, but giving both parties involved a very stern lecture or warning. This lady should have received that. But again, we have a dunderheaded cop down in South Carolina that decided that, just like Barney Fife, that he, by the way, that's fairly close to Barney Fife territory, isn't it? But decided, like Barney Fife, that he needed to make a name for himself. He needed to get an arrest on his record for that week, and that he didn't care. He did not care about the fallout to this individual. Well, again, who is superior in our society? It's the cop.
Right.
It's the cop. Okay.
Well,
now, if the cop did the very same thing, and if the cop did the very same thing that this woman got arrested for, the cop would not have faced sanctions probably anywhere. He wouldn't have been arrested. He wouldn't have had his mugshot taken. He wouldn't have had to go to the court system. But he would have gotten away with it because of this damn double standard that we have.
Well, and you know why we had a double standard? We're in overdrive. We'll stay here for just a minute. We can't go too long. But, you know, and part of the reason that you had this double standard is because cops know that they have this thing called immunity. You know, when a cop does something wrong, very rarely is a cop held personally liable for that if it's in the context of what's perceived as doing their duty. You know, so, for example, Michael Brown was shot. If this cop is found wrong, you know, he'll be charged with murder, manslaughter, whatever they can do. And I'm fairly sure they're going to try that anyway. They're going to indict him no matter whether he was right or wrong because it's gotten so crazy there. They have to have somebody to throw up. So whether he was right or wrong, I think he's already going to be indicted. However, that's my opinion. But let's face the reality here. Let's say he was wrong. He gets indicted. He gets put in jail. All right? Does it matter? The city of St. Louis or the county of St. Louis, you know, in this particular example, will be responsible to pay any damages that are awarded to the family. The cop
That's
doesn't
correct.
Have any resolve for that. If a cop harasses you or arrests you or anything else, you know, for example, with me, these cops should have been held personally liable for abuse of power and everything else. Instead, the city of Louisville mediated with me, and I agreed to the mediation, and I took just a very small sum just to get it all wrapped up. And, you know, I could have held on, went to court and everything else, but all I was going to do was hurt the taxpayers. So I didn't, because I don't believe in that. So, but these cops, they didn't suffer. They didn't have any money come out of their pocket. When we eliminate that double standard of automatic immunity being extended to the officers who are flagrantly doing wrongdoing in their job, then I think you might go back to a better common sense department. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen. The Supreme Court has ruled on many cases throughout the years, giving the cops immunity from prosecution for their criminal behavior, you know, in the context of doing their job.
Well, yeah, but see, that's called qualified immunity. That's called qualified immunity, and it only applies to within, as you just uttered the correct phrase, within the context of their job. Now, if a cop deviates from policy or goes outside of department rules and regs, they are legally on their own. They're legally on their own.
You would assume so, wouldn't you?
Policies and procedures. No, they are. So the question becomes, when a cop veers outside of their training and goes outside of the rules and regulations that have been set forth clearly by the department, the question becomes, how many citizens are going to pursue the matter in civil court or perhaps in federal court as a civil rights violation? Now, we know of some people in the United States that have escalated those kinds of situations into federal court as a civil rights violation, and they are succeeding more frequently than not. But those cases are very, very rare.
The real problem here, though, Paul, is the people who are suffering from this abusive behavior typically are the poorer people who can't afford the legal system. That's why you have these situations. I understand it's qualified immunity, but even in the case of the two officers that screwed me over, you know, yeah, they violated Louisville Metro's own standard operating procedures. From the word go, from the time they confronted me to the time I got out of jail, and the next year and a half that they kept the whole case open, as far as I'm concerned. But they violated every procedure they were ever taught. They signed a piece of paper saying that they understood these procedures when they got out of school. They go through annual training to reinforce the procedures they're supposed to follow. And yet, when it came time to say, we're going to sue these guys individually, every attorney, and I know plenty of good ones, said you're not going to get away with that. You're not going to be able to do it. Why not? Because they're just going to starve you out. If you want to spend thousands of dollars, maybe, and get lucky, you know, that's fine, but you're never going to recover what it's going to cost you to do it. Why? Because I didn't have thousands of dollars. I'm not a millionaire, and they weren't going to waste their time for free or even on a contingency because the chances of winning it were so remote. And that's the problem.
So
that's how they win.
Just as when in the first half hour, I alluded to the fact that the KREF is set up to protect dirty and crooked politicians by by extending the process that it was required for a citizen who wants to file a complaint against one, by making it as difficult as possible for that citizen to prevail. That's the same situation that you're describing now, okay? The whole process, let's assume, Ed, that in your example, that there is a poor person who cannot afford an attorney. Well, the system has provided funding for what's called public defenders, okay? Mm-hmm. They work with the poor all the time, but who pays their salary? That's right. The very same government against whom the poor person would have a grievance. Now, who do you think, who's the number one interest is going to be taken care of in a situation like that? It's going to be the government side. So the public defender will not put their heart and soul into the case on behalf of a poor person because they're looking at the prospect of losing their paycheck. And lastly, let me just remind you of another phrase that you used tonight, okay? You used the phrase to protect and serve in the context of the police, okay?
Right.
Who pays the salary of the police? It is the government that forcibly extracts the taxes from the citizenry. But the police's job is to protect and serve the government, not the citizens. And again, I think that is one of those things that has been just twisted around to make it politically powerful to make the public at large think that the police are there to serve them. Okay, any service to the public at large is incidental to their main mission, and that is to serve the government entity that pays their salary. Now, I know that you're going to say that you know of good officers out there that would disagree with that statement. And I will say, I'll acknowledge it. There are good officers that would disagree with that statement. But you get that same good officer in before the legal counsel to the police department in a matter involving them, that legal counsel is not going to care hardly at all about the public citizen that officer was trying to protect or serve. No, that lawyer is going to be telling the police department, we got to cover our backsides. And so that perfectly good officer is going to have the rug pulled out from him, under him or her, by their own department and their own legal counsel. So that's why I'm so critical about this protect and serve statement.
Well, okay, I can go with that. I'll tell you one thing. We are way over on overdrive. You've been with us the whole hour, Paul. I'll agree with you to a degree on that statement, actually. Any final thoughts, sir?
We need for the citizens to do what we can do to hold these people accountable in every shape, form, or fashion. And some of the best ways to do that we've discovered is to meet these elected individuals and sit down with them and be really frank and candid about where you as the citizen are on certain issues. These politicians believe that, and I think wrongfully so, that the public at large isn't watching and doesn't care all that much as to what they do. And I know, and you know, Ed, that when it comes time to take a look at your paycheck and it comes time to find out how to provide for your basic needs, people are so busy doing that basic function that they know things are wrong, but they're not in a position to spend a lot of time talking to these politicians. And in the meantime, the politicians go along and say, everything's great, you know. So go get them, public.
I get you there. I mean, I do. I tell you, for me, I'm just getting sick and tired of what is going on in this country. We are being led down a path basically of self-destruction, self-sabotage. Call it what you will. But when you've got mainstream media intentionally coordinating, you know, with a political agenda, you know, by these so-called fair and balanced news sources, and don't tell me that that's a Fox storyline, because everybody wants to say that they're fair and balanced. But there's nothing fair and balanced about the media that we get today. It is all about sex sells. That's the bottom line. What's going to sell advertising revenue? And everybody's gotten so used to the damn reality TV mindset that they see nothing wrong with being led down a path, a predetermined path, by the mainstream media or indeed elected leaders. The situation in Ferguson, Missouri is incredible. Mainstream media is intentionally stoking the fire of racism to aid and abet the Democratic liberal agenda. I'm sorry. I know I'm picking on Democrats with that statement, but you're not seeing the other side of the coin anywhere. You're not seeing that this is not a racist issue. This is an American issue. A black man gets killed by a white man. It's a huge story. A white man gets killed by a black man. Well, we're not going to tell the world about that. We have thousands of people coming in, or at least hundreds of people coming into Ferguson from all over the country who are nothing but thugs. Thugs, criminals, gang members, thugs, destroying their town. And instead of these people, when they see these guys going in, are saying, hey, stop. Instead of identifying, because, you know, when you live in a town, you know who's from there and who's not. Somebody knows somebody, and you know how that goes. Come on. We all live in a neighborhood. We may not know everybody in a neighborhood, but we got a pretty good idea who's there and who's not. And one of our neighbors is going to recognize somebody else that's there that you don't. So for the people of Ferguson or in any city or town anywhere in this country, identify those thugs when they come into your town and destroy it. One day you're going to need a convenience store. It's not going to be there because that small business said, screw it. Then you're going to be a ghost town. When you need a loaf of bread and you don't have money for gas and you got to go 20 miles to get to a store to get it, what are you going to do then? You think the police want to come in right now? And don't get me wrong, I've seen some horror stories from some of these damn police there. We had one video I saw earlier today. Damn cop walking down the street with his gun aimed at the crowd, walking sideways down the street, threatening he's going to fucking kill somebody. Those are his words, not mine. Photographers, reporters who actually do have the guts, some of them do have the guts to get in there and get the big picture and take the stories that nobody wants to put out, are being arrested or being pinned somewhere further down away from the action so that they can't report the real story of the police abuse. Yes, there are some police that are abusing, but that doesn't mean all police are. But for Ferguson residents, I'm telling you right now, the best thing you can do is when you put your hands up in the air and say, don't shoot, my arms are up, you want to make that your slogan? Then do that while you're walking up to one of these police officers and say, hey, officer, my hands are up, don't shoot. But that guy over there that's climbing out of the glass of that convenience store is not from Ferguson. He's here intentionally destroying the neighborhood that we want to preserve. We can only do that by working together. Do something to help yourself. And let's see what happens in the legal community when all of this is said and done. Let's see what the law does with this. Then we can have a rational discussion about what went wrong. But for God's sake, take some pride in yourself and take some pride in your community. Stop these thugs from destroying it. That's it for tonight, folks. Tomorrow night we'll be here at 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. We're going to talk about a few things tomorrow night. I'm sure we'll probably get back to some more of this Michael Brown shooting and what's going on in St. Louis. It just will not go away. You got idiots like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton who are still trying to stir the pot. Some dummies are sitting there trying to convince the family to bring in a guy who doesn't know the first thing about autopsies and present himself as an autopsy expert. So I'm sure we're going to spend more time on this, but we also have some other disturbing things going on. Eric Holder, of course, is in St. Louis, so that's only going to make the situation worse as far as I'm concerned. But we also had the beheading of an American journalist named James Foley. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow night. And let's find out, you know, what really led to his beheading. So come back tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, same time, same channel. We'll be here. In the meantime, folks, God bless. Have a great night. Thanks for listening.